In case number 22-800, Moore versus United States, Justice Kavanaugh has the opinion of the court.
For tax purposes, Congress has long treated some corporations, such as S corporations, as well as partnerships, as pass-throughs. Congress does not tax the entity on its income, but it instead attributes the undistributed income of the entity to the shareholders or partners, and then taxes the shareholders or partners on that income. Since 1962, Congress has likewise treated American-controlled foreign corporations as pass-throughs. That 1962 law, known as Subpart F, attributes certain income, mostly passive, of American-controlled foreign corporations to their American shareholders and then taxes the shareholders on that income. In 2017, Congress passed and President Trump signed a new tax law that attributes more income, including active business income, of American-controlled foreign corporations to their American shareholders and then taxes the shareholders on that income. The question here, in this case, is whether that 2017 tax is constitutional under Article 1, Sections 8 and 9 and the 16th Amendment to the Constitution. The issue arises in a suit by Charles and Kathleen Moore. In 2006, they invested $40,000 in an American-controlled foreign corporation that one of their friends had started in India. In return, the Moores received a 13% ownership share. The company, Keysoncraft, generated a great deal of income, but as of 2017, Keysoncraft had not distributed that income to its American shareholders, including the Moores, meaning that neither Keysoncraft nor the Moores had paid U.S. taxes on that income. The new 2017 tax, however, applied to the Moores because of their investment in Keysoncraft. Based on their pro rata share of Keysoncraft's accumulated income, they owed $14,729 in taxes on that income. The Moores claimed that this 2017 tax was unconstitutional. They argued that it violated the Constitution because the tax, in their view, was in essence a tax on property, namely a tax on their stock holdings, rather than a tax on income. And they argued that the Constitution does not authorize federal taxes on property as opposed to federal taxes on income. The District Court dismissed their suit, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit affirmed the dismissal. The Court of Appeals held that the tax was, in fact, a tax on income within the meaning of the Constitution because Keysoncraft earned significant income and the 2017 tax assigns only a pro rata share of that income to the Moores. This court granted review, and we now affirm. After independence in 1776 and under the Articles of Confederation in effect from 1781 to 1789, the federal government relied primarily on contributions from the states for revenue. The federal government's expenses and needs sometimes far outpaced the contributions that the states were willing to provide. As George Washington famously recognized during the Revolutionary War, reliance on the states to fund the national government hampered important national priorities, including the war against the British. The national government's continuing revenue problems under the Articles of Confederation helped prompt the Constitutional Convention that convened in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. The framers responded to the revenue problem by granting Congress an expansive taxing power. Article 1 of the Constitution affords Congress broad power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. Generally speaking, and to oversimplify for present purposes, Congress may impose a tax on your income, but generally not on your property. That is why Americans every year pay federal income taxes, but not federal property taxes. So the issue here basically comes down to whether this 2017 tax is a tax on income or on property. If it's a tax on income, it's constitutional. Tax on property, it's not constitutional. So what distinguishes income from property? The Moores argue that income requires realization. The Moores say that realization occurs when gains come into the taxpayer's coffers, for example, through salaries, wages, or dividends. Critically, however, and this is the key to this case, The 2017 tax does tax realized income, namely income realized by the corporation, Kiesenkraft. The 2017 tax then attributes that income to the shareholders and taxes the shareholders, including the Moores, on their share of it. So the precise and very narrow question that the court addresses today, and we want to stress the only question we address today, is whether Congress may attribute an entity's realized and undistributed income to the entity's shareholders or partners and then tax them on their portions. As we explain in detail in our opinion, this court's longstanding precedents, reflected in and reinforced by Congress's longstanding practice, establish that the answer is yes. In 1925, 1932, and in two cases in 1938, this court already held that Congress can attribute the undistributed income of an entity to the entity's shareholders or partners and then tax them on their share. Consistent with that case law, Congress has long taxed the shareholders and partners of business entities on the entity's undistributed income. Since 1958, for example, the Internal Revenue Code has taxed the shareholders of S corporations. And in 1962, Congress enacted Subpart F, which, as I mentioned, taxes American shareholders of American-controlled foreign corporations on their share of the corporation's income. That's a longstanding tax that is similar in form to the 2017 tax at issue in this case. So in this court, faced with a wall of Supreme Court precedent against them, as well as longstanding practice, the Moores had two choices. They could argue that all of those taxes are unconstitutional and all of those precedents should be overruled, or they could try to distinguish the 2017 tax from those other taxes and argue that only the 2017 tax is unconstitutional. They chose the latter approach. To be specific, they conceded that partnership taxes, S corporation taxes, and subpart F taxes are constitutional. They seek to distinguish the 2017 tax from all of those. But as we explain more thoroughly in our opinion, the Moore's effort to thread that needle, although inventive, is unavailing. Suffice it to say that we conclude that our precedents are on point and control the outcome here. We note that because the Moores cannot meaningfully distinguish the 2017 tax from similar taxes, such as partnerships, S corporations, and subpart F, if we were to accept the Moores' legal theory, that theory, taken to its logical conclusion, could render vast swaths of the Internal Revenue Code unconstitutional. And those tax provisions, if suddenly eliminated, would deprive the U.S. government and the American people of trillions in lost tax revenue, as the government explained to us in its brief and at oral argument in this court. The logical implications would therefore require Congress to either drastically cut critical national programs or significantly increase taxes on the remaining sources available to it, including, of course, on ordinary Americans. The Constitution does not require that kind of fiscal calamity. In sum, based on the text of the Constitution, longstanding congressional practice, and the court's precedents, we reject the challenge to the 2017 tax. That said, we emphasize again that our holding is narrow. It applies only in a pass-through situation. Nothing, in our opinion, should be read to authorize a hypothetical tax on both the entity and the shareholders or partners on the same undistributed income realized by the entity. In addition, as the government itself acknowledges, a hypothetical federal tax on one's wealth or net worth might be considered a tax on property, not income. And as the government further acknowledges, the constitutionality of a hypothetical tax on appreciation could depend on, among other things, whether realization is a constitutional requirement for an income tax. The Moores, as I've noted, argue that realization is a constitutional requirement. The government argues that it is not. But to decide this case, we have no need to wade into that debate and resolve their disagreement over any realization requirement because, as we've explained, the income involved in this case was realized income. So those are all potential issues for another day that may never come, and we'll not reach out to address or resolve any of those issues now. This is only a case about attribution of realized income, and we resolve it on that narrow basis. We affirm the judgment of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. Justice Jackson has filed a concurring opinion. Justice Barrett has filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, which Justice Alito has joined. Justice Thomas has filed a dissenting opinion, which Justice Gorsuch has joined.